Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm pleased to be speaking today with Brianna Ralston and Julie Fairman of the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. And they are the authors of a timeline piece in the October issue of AJN. The October issue marks AJN's 115th anniversary, and we would be remiss if we didn't also include another very important anniversary in nursing, and that is the 50th anniversary of the nurse practitioner role. So I want to welcome Brianna. Brianna is a fellow at the Barbara Bates Center for the Study of the History of Nursing at Penn, and Julie Fairman, who is the Nightingale Professor in Nursing, Chair of the Department of Biobehavioral Health Sciences, and Director of the Barbara Bates Center for the Study of History. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Sean. So in doing the timeline, and just for the listeners, this is a four-page piece that has a timeline of milestones in the evolution of the role, and we mix this up with some historical photos, so I think people will certainly find it interesting and to read, and just the photos I think are great. So I want to ask each of you, is there a milestone, a specific milestone in the NP role development that you feel really was a watershed moment?
I'm not sure that there was a particular moment. I think it actually was a culmination of a lot of different things. It was complicated, and I think it combined aspects of nursing education and what was going on in healthcare in the United States at that time, and the needs that communities and cities and people had that really all came together in profound ways, ultimately. I don't know, Julie, if you have...
No, I agree with Brianna. These innovations, which is what this role really was, springs up from the context of the time period, and it really supports really creative people like Loretta Ford and Henry Silver developing their role. Shortage of primary care providers, especially for poor rural people, and a specialization of physicians, as well as more people entering, having health insurance and entering the system through Medicare and Medicaid, really supported some some creative ideas that in a different context perhaps might not have developed. It's hard as historians to say this was the moment that really determined what was going to happen, but it's the context then that supports those really creative thinkers.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, and you mentioned this, the social movements at the time in the 60s where people were less reliant on the government and started looking at fending for their own and developing different types of models. Certainly the storefront health clinics were one that seemed to be part of this whole movement.
Yeah. Again, the context is really critical there in terms of the civil rights movement and a number of physicians and nurses going south with the Medical Committee for Human Rights to help not only care for people who didn't have access to care, but to also care for the civil rights workers who were injured, as well as the women's health movement that really began to question the paternalism they were seeing in healthcare when it came to their own health as women. And so we see all kinds of really innovative things happening because of the context of the time period.
Mm-hmm. One question I always came to mind was the fact that the first programs really started in pediatrics. And do you think that's significant in terms of the pediatric relationships, the relationships among the nurses and physicians in pediatrics was key as opposed to this perhaps starting in gerontology or in another area?
I think that I'm not sure that it completely started in the pediatric world, but we do see pediatrics gaining a fair amount of traction. And I think that the fact that we see the ways that we value children and the ways that we chose to really pursue creative solutions for healthcare for children who needed it really reveals a lot about how we were seeking those creative solutions. And I think also about valuing the particular patient population. Not that we weren't valuing older Americans as well, but we are really seeing a lot of new and innovative things going on in the pediatric world at this point. We're seeing pediatric surgery is becoming more and more of a specialty unto itself in the 60s and 70s, and we're seeing intensive care units for both newborns as well as children really begin to form in this period as well. So I think when we see the nurse practitioner movement stepping up, it's a piece of, I think, a larger story about children's health care that's really happening in the second half of the 20th century that is a much broader story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and all of the things that Brianna just described led to, in a sense, an unsettling in the pediatrician world because they were being trained in acute care hospitals and they saw these exciting things happening. And then when they went into practice, they were taking care of kids with sore throats and maybe a cold. And it was a big disconnect between the way pediatricians were trained and what happened in their practices. And we see a lot of disgruntled pediatricians who go back into acute care hospitals or really are just looking for something to invigorate their practices and help them. I mean, at the time, the general practitioner is pretty much fading from view, and that's where a lot of kids were getting their care. So it's that whole picture that's stage for Ford and Silver to think about how to provide care for these kids who really weren't getting the care they needed in the rural areas of Colorado.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the rural areas are the ones who have benefited the most from this model, or is that, would you say that's correct or not?
No, I think it's such a mixed place, for example. So Resnick and Lewis were at a city, you know, university-based hospital when they developed their model. And we see it, we see these models coming up all over the country in very different places, between rural health centers to academic health centers. And also, a little bit later, we do see Harriet Kitzman and her collaborator developing this new role in terms of pediatric nurse practitioners, a little bit different than Silver and Ford's, but again, children, but for the same reasons. It was very difficult to attract people into pediatrics at that time. But then at the same time, we have Barbara Bates and Joan Lynau developing their medical nurse practitioner program at Rochester also, which, you know, just to give you a taste of how diverse and in a sense, multi-directional, this whole movement was.
It's interesting to see how it's evolved now into even acute care nurse practitioners in many hospitals throughout the U.S. who are, in many ways, functioning as residents had functioned.
Yes.
Do you see
that related? Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you see more nurse practitioners moving, even though the idea was really primary care and initially, do you see more moving into the acute care setting?
Well, it all depends on what will happen with the residency work rules. If you remember in 2003, the Association of American Medical Colleges created, in response to some disasters that we were seeing in hospitals with very sleepy residents, the work rules that they could only work, I think it's an average of 80 hours over 4 weeks, or I'm not quite clear on, and I don't remember quite the parameters, but so that really changed the way residents provided care in hospitals. I mean, they were the workforce, almost like student nurses were the workforce for the training schools. Mm-hmm. And so they were the workforce, and when these rules went into effect, all of a sudden they really couldn't work more than a certain number of consecutive hours, and then they had to have a certain amount of rest in between. And, you know, as a result, there were gaping holes in the care that was needed. And, you know, nurse practitioners are really a great solution to step into that breach. And they, you can say that they did what the residents did, but I think, you know, another way to think about it is that they stepped into the breach and they created a way of providing care that was a little bit different, and it all depended on who they worked with.
Mm-hmm.
So in the future, I think as the resident work laws change again, which I think they probably will, we'll see more and more nurse practitioners and PAs mm-hmm. moving into acute care hospitals to work in these settings and to work with attending physicians that, you know, that will actually, I think, create a really interesting new model of care.
Hmm. One place where we haven't, or at least I haven't, seen a big growth, which would seem to be, to make a lot of sense, is in long-term care facilities. I know the Hartford Foundation has made great strides in improving the quality of geriatric care in hospitals, and now they've extended to long-term care facilities as well, in terms of the Nurses Improving Care of Health System Elders program. But I haven't really seen a lot of long-term care systems embracing the NP role. Do you think that's something that would be a growth area?
Well, I think it should be a growth area. Whether it will be, I think, has to do with what those, in many instances, for-profit systems and corporations will pay for.
Right now, long-term care is not, in our healthcare system, it's not necessarily the area that is hot and that makes money and that is, I mean, I think it should be. I agree with Julie that it should be a place where we really see that. And I think also to go back to the other point we were just talking about, these nurse practitioners kind of going in and working in ways that the residents had previously, I think it's also important to point out that they were going in and doing certain jobs, but they were still nurses, and they were mm-hmm. still doing this in a way that was bringing that nursing lens and that holistic value of holistic care to the job that needed to be done. And I think that that's really important to highlight, because it does differentiate them as unique and as valued in very, very particular ways in the system. And I think when we think about, you know, do we need nurse practitioners in long-term care, do we need them in these other areas, we also need to be asking questions about, well, do we need someone to do the job, but, you know, what are nurses bringing to this that really enriches why we value them in these particular areas? And I think, really, it's just a huge reason to be celebrating mm-hmm. this milestone as well.
Mm.
Certainly
the language is really important.
Yeah. Certainly the IOM report gave great impetus to the NP legislation and prescriptive practice, but there's still just 21 states that really are giving nurses, nurse practitioners full practice privileges. So if you looked into your crystal ball, where do you think the struggles will be? I mean, do you think this is still going to be a long time coming before nurse practitioners are accepted in terms of full practice privileges, or do you think it should be getting easier at this point?
I hope that
it is a crystal ball, so I won't hold you to it.
I have the crystal ball for starters. I would hope that it would become easier because of, you know, what we value and what we should be valuing, and the ways that nurses and advanced practice nurses and nurse practitioners really meet needs.
I agree with Brianna. I think this is nursing's time. From the issuing of the Institute of Medicine report on the future of nursing. I mean, I just looked today, and it's still the most popular download on the IOM site.
Yes, I saw that, yeah.
You know, we have made incredible strides since that report has come out. And I really think that we are we are really moving ahead. We have empowered nurses, and we've empowered them to work with others to change the regulations. We have people in the Federal Trade Commission who have been writing advocacy letters. It's not that they support nurses, but they support the idea of competition. And I think I really foresee, I'm very positive about this. I think we will see within the next couple of years that more and more states will come online. I don't know the number that have changed their regulations since the report was issued, but I have a feeling it's at least 7 or mm-hmm. 8 and maybe 4,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is an incredible movement considering that before the report, it was very hard to move that needle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're right. So, well, I want to thank the both of you very much, Brianna and Julie, for spending a few minutes and providing a little bit more context and discussion about the NP role and reflecting on the 50-year anniversary. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. This is great.